Welcome back to another episode of the Exterminatus Podcast, all things competitive in the world of Warhammer 40,000. My name's Eric, with me is my co-host Ray.
Hello.
And celebrating a birthday today is my co-host Jim.
Hello, happy birthday to me.
Awesome. So thank you for joining us on your special day, and got a big present for you today, and that is lots to talk about. So we had the rumored giant FAQ that was supposed to come out. I think you hit it on the head, Jim, on one of your other shows. I would pay $40 for this FAQ rather than the chapter approved book. There's a lot more information in this one than there was in the chapter approved, and a lot of key changes. We also had two GT events to talk about, and we're going to have a little discussion about some of our hopes and dreams, as well as some of our disappointments, as we're at the halfway mark of 2021. That kind of snuck up on us. So talk about that as well. So let's do some hot takes from the FAQ. First and foremost, I don't have to relearn the Pythagorean theorem from high school anymore.
Yeah, just wait until the non-Euclidean geometry comes out and people are trying to make charges using non-flat space-time, and then we're going to have another FAQ for that. So
yeah, especially with terrain and hills. I remember that was an issue. Do you measure base to base along the rise of the hill, or do you measure straight line distance? But anyway, long story short, the one thing we don't need to worry about is I am 9 inches away from the Raider, but I'm actually only 8 inches away because the Raider is on a flying stand and all other flying models that go in between. So that was clarified. You're 9 inches away. You need to be 9 inches away. You need to roll the appropriate distance to get there if you're going to charge them. So I'm glad they're cleaning it up. So that really helped. But I don't think we've seen the last of this. I think you hit it up. I hit it right there. And especially when it comes to terrain, you know, being on the top floor, can I charge you? And vertical engagement distance and all that stuff. We'll see what happens there.
Yeah, I mean, at the end of the day, I think if there is a advantage to be had, the community will abuse it. So I'm glad that they, fixed this. But at the end of the day, we're playing a game that uses measurements, and through the 3D world that we play in is not perfect. So oftentimes you do get these kinds of weird peculiarities. So I'm actually surprised they addressed it in this FAQ, because it's a fairly recent controversy, you know, like, and usually they're so far behind on like answering these questions. Like, I'm surprised this didn't go on for like 6 more months and then with them finally answering it, because it feels like people are only really talking about this but in the last month or so, which means for FAQ purposes, that's actually really fast for them to have answered.
Yeah, no, I agree. And it was one of the bright spots of this FAQ was, I don't get the impression, unlike chapter approved, this was not written 6 months ago. This was, you know, it shows that they are still reactive, even in these times of, you know, the lingering days of COVID here, but still fairly reactive. Nice to see that. One of the few wins for Chaos in this update, and we'll get to the losses soon enough. But guess what? If you summon models, you don't lose your super doctrines. That's kind of neat.
Yeah, that's one that... So that is a perfect example of one that we've been asking since the Death Guard book came out, which was literally 6 months ago, and was not included in the Death Guard FAQ, but was definitely asked during that time. And we've had 6 months of unknowns, and so now it's been cleared, and obviously I'm really glad with how they ruled it.
So kind of cool. I've always been a big fan of the concept of summoning demons into a Chaos army, but I know strategically and competitively it's not always been the coolest thing there. And also sometimes the practicality of walking around with, you know, 4,000 points of demons that you might need at a given moment.
Absolutely.
One thing I was glad they clarified. They could have done a little more clarity, but it got better, is when things say it's done in the deployment phase, things like chapters, combat squatting and different things, they actually clarified which step that is in the pregame sequence, which to me was kind of like a no-brainer, but why was this taking so long to fix? So,
yeah, and I'm still not clear on some points. So, for instance, there are certain stratagems that exist that allow you to redeploy using the normal mission rules for that mission. And so, or the normal deployment rules for that mission. So then the question is is declaring transports and reserves a deployment rule? Or is it before the deployment part? Because if it is, then there are certain stratagems that potentially allow you to, say, go back into deep strike. But if it isn't, if it's a whole separate thing, then you can't do that. But then on one hand, there's actually a stratagem that the Emperor's Children have that says, like, asks, there's an FAQ for it, that asks, basically, can this unit go back into deep strike? And the answer is yes. But again, it's an 8th edition FAQ for Faith and Fury. So it's not quite clear if that's still applicable. So at this point, I'm still not sure if a unit uses a redeploy stratagem that allows them to redeploy as per the regular mission rules, if they're allowed to go into deep strike, provided they have that ability.
Right.
It's not.
It's always a problem with an older codex. It's like, okay, the wording isn't quite clear here. Generally, what I'm getting from what they said was, most of your changes happen on step 11, and any of those stratagems that before the start of battle, that's step 13 of the pregame. So I was like, okay, that kind of makes sense. But sometimes the nitty gritty, we start reading through how the stratagem reads, it's not quite that clear yet, but it's a step in the right direction.
Absolutely.
This one kind of took me by surprise. If you have a psyker who knows multiple lures, it's all or nothing. You cannot dip a little bit of one spell from each lure. You have to use everything from one lure, which is an interesting bookkeeping.
Unless it's worded specifically for that.
Right.
I think I understand what you're saying, but I just want to be really clear. Like, there are certain books, for instance, like Thousand Suns, for instance, the wording on theirs is very specific on like how they choose spells. So I think what you're saying is correct, but I don't think the way that you're saying is correct. If that makes sense. I think you're muddling it a bit.
I might be muddling a bit. I'd be curious to see what the new Thousand Suns Codex looks like after, you know.
Yeah.
Do they change it to this intention? You know, let's put it that way.
Yeah. So to give you an example, the Thousand Suns lores basically say they have access. They say they know two psychic powers from the discipline of change, Dark Criticus, and or discipline of Zinj. So there's an and or there.
Mm-hmm.
But there's certain, I think what you're saying, and I think it's specifically the things like the Tome of Malkador is what I was addressing.
Right.
Sometimes it'd say it knows or. It wouldn't say and or. It would just say or. And in those cases, I think it's clarifying that it's only one. But then there's also these cases where something has quote unquote access to a codex. They have access to a lore. And certain books would give them access. And so it was clarifying what that actually means to have access to something.
Right.
Just still very confusing.
It's a little, I think that's as by the time we get through the full codex cycle, which, you know, might have a new president by then, this should all be cleared up. But you're right. Yeah, there's still some individual exceptions, but I can see this is where the game designers intended this to go. It was like, oh, okay, interesting. Death Guard used to be able to be immune to all things in their path except for shrubbery. That's finally been changed.
Can we talk about this for a sec?
Absolutely.
So this is, for me, a classic case of the inability of us to know intent from Games Workshop. So to clarify what I'm saying is, a lot of times we play a rule a certain way because we're like, this must be the intention. And for the first 2 months of the Death Guard book coming out, everyone played that Death Guard could move through forests, right? Or for the first little while until the FAQ came out. Because that seemed to us that was what would make sense, and it seemed that that was the intent based on the way the rule was written. But then the FAQ came out, and lo and behold, we learned that no, actually, our reading of Games Workshop's intent was incorrect. So we should have actually been playing it fully raw, right? So the raw was actually right. The rules as written was actually correct. And the rules as intended was incorrect. And the way that we were interpreting the rules was incorrect. So there was this whole argument around that time around rules intended versus rules as written. And a lot of people saying, well, you shouldn't play rules as written because we should try to see what Game Dirt Shop thinks. And a lot of people then were playing it for rules as intended. And sure enough, it turned out that rules as written was actually correct. But then last week, we got another FAQ which reverses the rules written and it goes back to that original rules as intended, right? My point being that there's no moving forward. There's no way ever. And I know there's always these constant arguments about rules as written and not being that guy that's playing rules as written. Because if you're like, just like this Pythagorean charge, that was rules as written, right? And there's a lot of argumentation around don't play rules as written because it's like, you know, it's sketchy, it's shady, it's whatever. But what we learned from the Jethgard fact, the first part anyways, is that actually sometimes the rules as written is exactly how we're supposed to play it. That's actually what Games Workshop intends. But then later on, their intention changes and so the rules as written change. And I guess my whole point is like, this is just a perfect example of why it's so, so hard to say whether rules as intended or rules as written is correct, because there's multiple examples of both being correct and in both cases being reversed. So things where we were playing them what we thought was intended and then actually the written was correct, or we were playing them as written and the intended was and it was not intended to play that way. So there's literally no way to actually know what Games Workshop wants. And one of the things that I will give them kudos for is including the designer's commentary. And I noticed that with the AOS book, they did some previews for Age of Sigmar 3.0. There's actually seems to be a decent amount of designer's commentary in there. And I just wish that they would include that more often in the rule books, because then it would actually give us some insight into their intent. And then that way we can extrapolate what they actually mean when they write their bad rules. So,
Yeah, I agree with the commentary part. I agree with also actually everything pretty much you said. It's one of those, okay, what did you mean by this? I think this is it. Okay, how do I make a ruling so we can be defensible? And then all of a sudden they, here's new evidence that's been brought to the case, Your Honor. You're like, oh, geez, you know, they changed it again. But we should have just stuck with it in the beginning. But all right, there we go. So hopefully this will be the final change to Death Guard. So regarding movement.
Well, except the nerfs to warp time. Rest in peace, my cross-faction casting.
We'll get there in a sec. Yeah, that's a big one. That one, yeah. I had something to say about it, but I think you got a lot more than I do. Let's talk about always fighting first and always fighting last. They finally cleaned this up a little bit, and it's almost like they brought back the initiative stat. So you basically have like a 1, 2, or 3, and you kind of just get knocked down a level depending on who your opponent is.
Yeah, I'm happy with it. Again, going back to it seems like there's a little bit of chatter right now that there's like a few edge cases that they've missed as part of their set of examples. But again, I think the reason they did a decent designer's commentary on it, which is really helpful now, because now we can use that as kind of a insight as to what they want. So if there are future rules that come out that maybe are missing a comma or, you know, their spacing is wrong, and so people read it in a weird way, we at least can now say, well, if we look at this precedent, there's actually precedent for a ruling, and that should apply kind of globally. So there should just only be 3 types of fights: fight first, normal fighting, and fighting last. And everything falls into one of those. There's no difference between, say, like a fight last and an ineligible to fight. It's all the same. There's only those 3 categories. So everything can just go in these buckets and make our lives a lot easier, hopefully.
Yeah, I like it. And they also cancel each other out. So if I have a fight first going into fight and you stick a fight last on me, I fight normal. Did I read that right? They fight normal now?
Yeah. You fight normal. Yeah,
that's right. This next one, it made sense in the eyes of the horrificness of the Drakari death machine, but that had some collateral damage along the way. So long story short, if you have any like exploding 6 ability that gives you extra attacks, the extra attacks do not benefit from any additional upgrades. And for example, that includes like you normally would get 2 attacks with a particular weapon. So the succubus with all the multiple competitive edge, which is the one you keep re-rolling dice that don't make it to the damage phase. So yeah, you don't get the double O's up because you're using a special weapon. Unfortunately, Chaos kind of got to be a collateral damage in this one.
So, I mean, not really, because at the end of the day, Death of the False Emperor has a caveat already that it can't generate extra attacks.
Okay, some people that were arguing that, so that's why I was like, going, all right, I think that, we can put that to bed. But yes, that was, Death of the False Emperor. So, yeah, don't generate multiple attacks every time you keep rolling. So it's like, oh.
Yeah. So I think the I think where there's maybe a little bit of confusion, and this comes with things like, for instance, Mortarion sweeping attack, which lets him make two attacks for every one attack he makes, right?
Correct. Yes.
So in the old 8th edition FAQ, I'm just trying to read it right here to make sure I get it right. Yeah, so they've basically nerfed Mortarion slightly because basically in the old rules, if I say was doing a sweep attack for Mortarion, and a lot of the big monsters are getting these sweep attacks now, in the old rules, if I say had five base attacks and every attack I rolled two dice, so I got 10 attacks. And say I got 10 hits, but two sixes. I could then take those two sixes, and for each of those attacks, there'd be two attacks in the old rules, right?
Right.
Because it used to be able to roll for every additional attack, I could make two attacks. For every attack, I could make two attacks. So I wasn't actually generating additional hits, but I was getting additional attacks. But it's just because it converts every one attack into two attacks. So they've nerfed that now. So that's something that's been nerfed. But Death of the False Emperor has never been able to produce additional attacks. Okay. And what we've seen with Death Guard is that Death of the False Emperor is going away because Death Guard didn't get it and they used to have it. So what that means, what I'd expect, is we're not going to see Death of the False Emperor in the new Chaos books anyways, outside of maybe a stratagem.
Fair enough.
But I doubt we're going to see it in the new books anyways, is my point.
So there we go.
Which, yeah.
Another one, rules for standing still. That was, wow, didn't realize I needed much clarification, but actually reading through it, it made sense. So it's like, oh, so if you count as not moving, or what can you do with that ability? And guess what, tile players? One ka, you can fall back and shoot.
Great.
Yeah. I'm like, woo! Yeah. At least I was like, yeah, that makes sense. This next one I was really surprised by.
There is a weird interaction for this though.
Such as?
I believe. And maybe I'm actually wrong here. So
there's a lot to this rule, I'll be honest with you. I was kinda so
from what I understand, ultramarine suppressors, right? Mm-hmm. So ultramarines have a rule, and I'm just gonna pull it up here. So I wanna get it right. And this is actually a nerf for ultramarines. It's an indirect nerf for ultramarines, but ultramarines, so something like suppressors in ultramarines, they used to basically, let me just pull up suppressors, do their rules. So ultramarines have their discipline is that units with this tactic, no, that's not the right one. What are the ultramarine chapter rules? They can shoot in which they fall back.
Right, at minus one.
Right. I thought there was another rule that they had. Maybe I was wrong. But basically, there's a rule where if you deep strike now, and you also have a rule that makes you count as stationary, it never counts. So what that means is, if say you have a rule, I'll use Chaos Havocs, for instance, mm-hmm. right? It says they remain stationary, but say you have a rule that lets you deep strike, but you also have a rule that means you always count as stationary, for the purpose of say firing heavy weapons. You don't get that on the turn that you deep strike, because if you're a reinforcement unit, it has no effects on the turn that they're set up in the battlefield. So if you have a rule that ignores, say, lets you always count as stationary for the purpose of firing heavy weapons, and I think there's certain units that do have that,
right?
Like Death Guard, right? I think. Actually, an inexorable advance actually is worded like that way, where you count stationary, then on the deep strike turn, you don't get that, if that makes sense.
It does. Yeah, I think Dark Angels have it as well. So yeah.
Yeah, which is a nerf, essentially.
Right. Also, same thing with transports. You can't jump out of transports that have already moved. And also you cannot, well, I didn't count as moving, so I can still do, I fell back. I don't count as moving. I can still do an action. No, to specifically spell out, that's the, if you advance or fall back, you cannot do an action regardless if you have that ability.
Yeah.
I think that's kind of what you're looking for.
Where is it?
Are you talking about the Science of Gilliman ability?
Yeah. What's that one do?
While the tactical doctrine is active, models with this ability that moved in your movement phase but did not advance or fall back can make attacks with ranged weapons in the following shooting phase as if their unit had remained stationary this turn.
That's the one, right? So Sky, so that's, and that's from the Ultramarines book. That's one of their doctrines, right? Or where does that rule come in?
That's just their that's their overall one, the one where
chapter tactic, your army. Right. That's what I was saying. So suppressors under that rule, they used to be able to drop down and fire their autocannons at no penalty. But now, because they don't count a stationary in the turn they count drop down, they lose that. And Death Guard actually don't get nerfed because their rules is very specific. They just don't suffer the penalties for moving, for advancing or firing heavy weapons. Oh, no. No, actually, I'm right. So look at this. So Death Guard have a rule called Inexorable Advance. This unit counts as having remained stationary if it did not fall back or advance in your previous movement phase. So if you deep strike, say, for instance, death, like say strategic reserved some Plague Marines and they had a heavy weapon, they would not get that. They would still have to, they'd suffer the penalty for shooting their heavy weapon.
Interesting. I'll have to keep that in mind. Yeah.
So just something to keep in mind.
I appreciate that.
So that also would affect the strategy for Thousand Sons, because I know some people will do the like the Dark Matter Crystal, where they'll move their models. Oh, wait, no.
Yeah, the Thousand Sons one, though, is I think it's worded a little bit different just because of the fact that they're an 8th edition book. So I don't think they actually count as remaining stationary. I think they just don't suffer the penalties for moving and firing heavy weapons, I believe. That's the rubrics you mean, right, for instance?
Yeah.
Their rule is... they just don't suffer the -1 hit for moving and shooting heavy weapons. Yeah. So that's separate. It's not that they count as stationary, right? Same with rubric. So they'd still be fine. But I assume in the 9th edition book, they're going to say, for instance, count as stationary for the purpose of firing heavy weapons, because they're going to update the wording, in which case then they wouldn't get that. Anyways, we can move on.
No problem. Yeah, check your codex. But yeah, for the most part, that's what's going on there.
Are you a gamer that has more bare plastic than you have time to paint? Do paintbrushes spontaneously combust when you hold them? If either of these is true, contact White Crow Studios and get your models painted by a college-trained professional painter. You can contact Bo at whitecrow.commissions@gmail.com and view his previously painted models at White Crow Studios on Facebook.
This one's a little more cut and dry. If I have objectives secured, my opponent has a way of removing objectives secured. Doesn't matter how many additional abilities to improve my objective secured, I have lost objective secured. And if you had, how many times did say objective secured in the podcast, as the over-under was 5, you have won. So it's a nice way.
What if I say it one more time? Won't that ruin whoever?
Oh, no, it's over-under is 5. So it's okay. As long as we got over 5, you have won. Congratulations. some people were cheering about all the nerfs to Drukhari. Quite frankly, I thought we got out of this pretty unscathed. And one of the key ones is the Agents of Vect. So yes, if you have a ability to make a stratagem 0 CP and I put Vect on it, it will cost you 1 CP moving forward.
Which makes total sense.
Right. Well, honestly, all the nerfs to Drukhari made total sense. I looked at a lot of them and was like, really? 3 patrols gives you 2 extra command points? No, that's wrong. So, but whatever. I digress. This one I was surprised at. This goes back. This is another class example, like you mentioned earlier. Rules as intended, rules as written. And if you go through history, all the way back, even the 3rd edition, this is something that's always been a problem. Anytime a rule that comes up where you say you need to move, and then the guy just goes, well, I'm moving in a circle. So I moved, and I'm like, I had 14 inches in small. It's always been a problem. So now they've clarified it that you actually have to move. It's your starting spot to your final destination has to be a minimum distance in order to get these abilities. So I guess it's a big deal for Ravenwing, apparently.
Yeah, this is like one of those rules where everyone, it's like you roll your eyes when people do that kind of to you. And you're like, okay, so you moved, but you didn't move. And we all know what it's trying to do, but
right.
like everyone knew that this was one of those things that, and I say everyone knew, even though I just went through an example of how everyone maybe rules intended isn't really clear. No, so I'm glad that they actually fixed this, but it was just one of those things where it just felt really bad. It was like, this is stupid.
No, I think you're hit on the head. Everybody knew, but everybody has known they've gotten away with it in the past at one point, because this is, has been FAQ'd both ways multiple times. And I think, just drove me nuts. With it, they just said, if you advanced. So there's already a penalty for advancing, you know, against your shooting. So this would have made it a lot simpler. Or, but yeah, it's, again, it's one of those you're like, oh, really? We have to talk about this? But it's been clarified. So yes, you actually have to move your models.
Well, but the thing is, with advancing, you don't actually have to move still.
True. But at least we've
covered. Which is weird, because like I can advance 0 inches, but I can't move 0 inches. So it's like, wait, what? Like, that doesn't make sense.
So I've held Jim off long enough. Tell me about warp time, Jim.
Well, not just warp time, actually. It was a cross the faction nerf. So all the chaos powers that were Heretic Astartes, so Prescience no longer works cross faction. Things like Diabolic Strength no longer work. And Prescience and Warp Time. Those are the three, I think, the three buff
ones.
Those are
three big ones, yeah. Yeah, that's it.
Yeah. Look, let's back up a sec. I'm not surprised. No one expected that this was going to last. Like, I think after we saw the changes to the Death Guard book with how core, everything's kind of keyed off core, everyone expected that this would change, right? There was no Chaos player that would tell you that, oh, when the Chaos Space Marine book comes out, you'll still be able to warp time characters cross-faction. You'll still be able to cast Prescience cross-faction. Everyone knew that this was coming. The problem is twofold. A, this has been around since the start of 8th edition, right? So this is not like some new thing that 9th edition uncovered. This is literally you've been able to do this since 8th edition. And second, if you're going to taketh, then giveth as well. And so Games Workshop has taken away one of the very few things that actually made Chaos Faction as a whole viable, and they haven't replaced it with anything. And we have Thousand Suns coming out probably in the next 8 to 10 weeks. So we don't know what that's going to look like. And Chaos Space Marines is not on any horizon, especially 2 in Chaos Space Marines, which they, like, the amount of effort they put into FAQ that warp time, they could have easily also FAQ'd all the Chaos Space Marines to have 2 wounds. It would have probably been less writing.
Especially because had the book with all the point values.
Yeah, I mean, we already know the point values of 2 wounds rubric, of Thousand Suns.
Right.
So I guess why I'm salty about this isn't that it was taken away, because I knew it was going to happen, especially when the Chaos Space Marine book comes out, but it was just done at a weird time and for no particular reason. Like, did they think that the new Mortarian was just too strong, that Death Guard with this warp time was just too strong? Because that's really the only case that it was slightly good, was with Mortarian getting warp timed around. But what I hope this does do is, now that it pulls it away from like a faction like Death Guard, I hope we start to see the true power level of Death Guard, which is going to get worse. And as a result, we get a more comprehensive balance change. Unfortunately, due to the nature of chapter approved, I mean, they've probably already printed the next chapter approved, and since it's impossible to have any sort of digital update, I just don't know how they'd ever do it. We're probably just screwed until like two years from now. So I'm not happy about it, but I'm okay with it, and I can live with it, I guess.
I agree. It's a bent of balance, and if you're taking, like I said, if you take a little bit from the left, then you have to add weight somewhere else to get those scales and balance. And the opportunity was there to, again, bring out a 2-wound space brain. What are we waiting for? I just don't get it. And it was unfortunate. So it just was very, because realistically, we could not see a true Chaos Space Brain Codex is probably not till August at the earliest.
Not even.
I'll be surprised if we see it this year with the way things are going.
So I was discussing with Alex McDougall earlier. AOS, like the sisters release and AOS will take us probably till the 3rd of July, because 3rd of July is AOS release, mm-hmm. and the pre-order is the 19th. This Saturday is not the pre-order for the remaining sisters range. So we might get the remaining sisters range, say, on the 19th. And then finally, like, all the sisters basically done by the 26th, which means we might see the orc pre-order around the 3rd. So that gives us another, 2 weeks maybe. If that, I still think it's going to be longer than that. But realistically, I don't think at the minimum we're going to get Thousand Sons and Grey Knights till August. I think that's probably safe. And if we get two books in 1 month, I will be shell shocked. So realistically, we're probably not getting Chaos Space Marines till at the minimum September, October of this year.
Yeah, Halloween theme type thing. So
someone, because I had a big rant about this on one of the shows last week, and someone commented, "This is, you know what they said? They're like, maybe they don't want to add these rules because Chaos is getting a big rewrite, and so they need like." I'm like, okay, but like, how? What does that matter? If they're doing a huge rewrite, then when the book's out, those rules will replace the two wound rules or whatever temporary rules they put in, and off we go. Like, yeah. It's literally a non-starter what you're making. And then a lot of people are like, well, maybe they're saving it for the Emperor's Children and World Eaters books. And I'm like, guys, there's been zero evidence that the World Eaters and or Emperor's Children are actually getting a release. That's just like a lot of wishlisting from Chaos players for the last 2 years. And they keep saying, oh, that's probably what they're doing, or they're going to do that eventually. But literally, we've had zero hints, zero evidence, zero actual substantial rumors that Emperor's Children and or World Eaters are getting a book with like a full release of models, et cetera, et cetera. That's literally just made up fake news, but people keep talking about it. Like that's the reason why Chaos is delayed. I'm like, no, but like literally like we haven't heard from any source at all that's reliable that this is actually something that's happening. And it's just like totally infuriating. People need to shut up about it.
Yeah. Best case scenario, you get the supplement treatment like Space Marines did. And hopefully your supplements will have the Traitor Legions in it. But again, I'm not holding my breath. So I'll go over the Drukhari nurse, since I've been labeled a Drukhari apologist in the past. So Dark Technomancers does not affect liquefire guns anymore, of all varieties. Quite frankly, I think they should have gone a step further. I think they should have gone back to the old rules. If you roll a one to wound, you take a wound, because there's still, it needs to be on the bearer of the gun. There's still that issue there.
Eric, though, to be fair, this is actually way worse of a nerf, because what you're advocating for is that it still works, that it still works on those guns, but it's just potentially going to cause a mortal wound.
The idea is that you should blow up the guy with the gun. The other problem was is you put the liquefier gun in a squad of 20 and you have to kill all 20 guys, and somehow the liquefier gun is still working. The fact that it's taken out, fine, great. I'm kind of indifferent. I thought it was kind of meh. You know, I was just like, okay, that's not how it was intended. It's not how it works, but okay, it's causing a lot of damage. Let's get rid of it. I'm fine with it. Raiding forces no longer give bonus CP. Really? That needed explanation. I still, even as I read it, I was like, no, it's how do you get a profit if you refunded something that's free? Like if somebody gives you something free and it says, sorry, I didn't want this. I'd like, here's my receipt. I would like it back. I don't get full retail value. I get the price I paid for it. So that just didn't make any sense, but I'm glad they finally clarified that. So yes, you do not get two free CP for running three patrols. Point changes to Raiders and Drazar. Okay. Could have been a little bit more, honestly, for the Raider, but we'll see what happens as things go down the pike.
I think it's about right. Like, I think at most maybe 5 war would have been okay. But I think 10 to 15, 5 would have been too cheap. I think 10 is just right there. 15 maybe is probably a little bit better, but I think it's okay. So
yeah. So that was, I was okay with that. Competitive edge, that we talked about that earlier with the stacking attacks, and totally snoozed on this. I had no idea the Tantalus and the Reaper and all the Forge World models did not have power from pain. So, glad to see that now. So,
but that and then obviously with the nerfs to the competitive edge, Succubus, with the crazy amount of attacks, that's obviously a big change. I would have liked to see them clean up a little bit of the cross faction shenanigans.
Yeah, I was really upset with that.
That's the one thing that we're still there. Yeah. And I don't really agree with.
I don't understand how that's the buy. I get it now when somebody had to explain it to me, to be honest with you, because I just didn't read it that way. But the whole idea, why is a succubus in a coven's detachment? That doesn't make any sense. And at first I thought they were just talking about a real space raid and they just didn't clarify it. Nope, it's not the case at all. So no, that definitely needs to be changed. That was very disappointing that did not get changed. So give it time, I guess. So, but good news for all you guys with the Silent King, he can use his stratagems. So that's pretty cool.
Absolutely.
So any other hot takes from the FAQ that I did not go over?
There is one that is fantastic.
Tell me.
It has resulted me in spending a lot of money that I did not want to. I am soon to be the proud owner of 2 Charybdis drop pods for Chaos Space Marines. Or not the Charybdis, the Dreadclaw, the smaller ones.
Okay.
Because
the Charybdis are huge.
Yeah, sorry. For those of you that did not know, Chaos drop pods had the drop pod assault rule, which allowed them to come down on turn one, but they did not have the rule that allowed models to disembark on the turn that they came down. So you could drop them on turn one, but the models would have to stay inside, which meant they were basically pointless. The whole point of drop pods is that you can come drop down and come out on the same turn. So now they do have that rule. So now Chaos drop pods are able to drop down turn one and disembark their contents, which I have gone ahead and put 2 into a very nasty Empress Children list, Empress Children Thousand Sons list that I'll be playing in our 40K League coming up. So I'm waiting for those to arrive and very excited to paint them. Because Chaos drop pods are really cool too, because unlike the Imperial ones, they actually fly. So once they drop, they can actually fly 12 inches. They're like flyers. And they have like 4 strength 12 AP4 flat 3 damage attacks with their claws. That's, and then if they fly over a unit on a 2+, it causes D3 mortal wounds. So they're actually pretty nasty little like, and they're 115 points. So like 20 points more than a Raider. I still prefer Raider, but with that said, they're like actually one of the better transports for 115 points. Because of the fact that, and you can put dreadnoughts in them. So I have a list that I wrote with 2 of them. And then I have a unit of 10 Noise Marines, 3 Emperor's Children Obliterators, an Emperor's Children Contemptor, and then Lucius. So the plan is to have Lucius and the Oblitz in one, because the Oblitz take 3 spots each. And then have either the Noise Marines or the Dreadnought in the other. And then have turns, like turn ones, where I drop those down and cause all sorts of nastiness. And then obviously with Honor the Prince, which allows any of my charges automatically to be a 6, they have a very good chance of charging on that turn as well. So I've created a super nasty Thousand Sons Emperor's Children Alpha Strike list that I'm actually playing in Admech on Friday.
Wow, that sounds awesome.
Digitally, I'm playing it on TTS against.
Does the Charybdis still cause a ridiculous amount of damage if you drop it on an opposing unit? That was some of
the Charybdis also has like similar shenanigans. It's the problem with the Charybdis. It's like, I think it's like even a super heavy flyer of some kind. Let me just see here. And it's like very unwieldy. Like, I don't know if you've ever actually seen a Charybdis in real life.
Yeah.
It's like freaking massive.
Right. It's like the size of a basketball. It's crazy.
Yeah. So, is it a fast attack? No. And it's like heavy support or something crazy like that.
It's changed so many times. I don't remember anymore. I just know I've seen so many where I think it holds 20 models. So people fill it with 20 Khorne Berserkers and it just, they run out and choppy choppy. So I'm like,
Yeah, it's definitely, where is the rules for it? Is it Lord of War?
No. Maybe?
You sure?
I have no idea. No, I have not seen those because it's always been, they said, you read those first rules and you're like, this thing's useless. Move on.
Yeah, so Charybdis is pretty nasty though. It's a fun little unit. It's actually a Lord of War. It's a 400 point drop pod. It's ridiculous. It holds 20 models, but can still only hold 1 dreadnought for some reason.
It's all the chains to hold the Hellbrute down.
Yeah, so even though it's double the size of the Dreadclaw, it holds the same amount of dreadnought models. And basically it has this one has a melt array, which is a close combat attack, and it's got basically a crack missiles built in, and then if it flies over something on a 2-4, the unit suffers D3 mortal wounds, and on a 5+, it suffers 2D3 mortal wounds.
Okay,
which is really nasty.
Yeah,
they still have it's 400 points, and it's ridiculous, and it moves 15 inches. It's super ridiculous.
Oh my goodness. It would not be a competitive podcast unless I brought up a certain event that happens every late January, early February. That'd be the Las Vegas Open. If you did not get your ticket, you're out of luck. They actually sold out. They are at 1,100 registered participants for the 40K singles event. And yours now is your chance to hop on to the waiting list. So I thought that was pretty commendable. People are excited about being able to play 40K in person again.
Yeah, I have a ticket. I bought my ticket. So hopefully I'll see you guys in Vegas.
I'm a control freak. One of the worst, it's like one of my favorite places to be. One of my least favorite places to be is the airport because there's just so many variables. But it just drives me nuts when I, so this is one of those moments. So I have my email from Frontline Gaming says, we have your ticket from last year and you chose to forward the payment to this year. So just hang in there. We'll get you. But that's all I got. So I think I have a ticket. So I'm just hopefully going to get that email from Frontline Gaming saying, yes, thank you for your patronage and your patience. And we look forward to seeing you in 2022. But until then, I'm going to be a nervous Nelly. So I
wouldn't worry too much. Like what happens, this is kind of the cycle. There's initially a lot of ticket sales. Reese goes on the various forums and says, hey guys, everyone, buy tickets. They're selling out quick. People buy tickets even not knowing if they're going to be able to make it, just like they do GW stuff that they're not going to play with, in a panic in case they do end up going and don't have ticket. And then sometime about 2 months before the event, when the rubber hits the road, like 30% of the players realize that they're not actually going to be going and are stuck with tickets that they bought at a panic. And then they end up either refunding them or selling them. So there's always going to be like a second wave. Like I'm sure in 3 or 4 months after a bunch of people return tickets, there'll be like a second wave of tickets. So I don't worry too much. We'll and that. Always it's Vegas. So, you know, someone's going to get too messed up to even play the first day. So just show up and enjoy the spots. Yeah.
Such a truth. All right.
Hey listeners, this is Raymond with the Extreme Honest Podcast here to talk to you about KR cases. If you're like me and you're constantly looking for that better way to store your armies, then look no further than KR cases. That's right, this is the foam company known for their soft blue foam in the cardboard cases. They're a great way to mix and match whenever you're heading out for that next tournament. Just swap out those boxes and no need to worry about switching the foam in and out. They're sturdy. The boxes help protect your models. And when you order, they come fast, the order is right, and for a better price than the other guy. So go to krcases.com, and when you place your order, be sure to mention the Exterminatus podcast.
So, surprisingly enough, this weekend, there were actually two events to talk about. We'll talk about the charity one first. Ray, you were telling me about this, the Armed Forces Day Charity Games in Lockport, Illinois.
Yep. All right, so here's the top five. In fifth place is Chris Babiar playing Drukhari. In fourth place, Kevin Leonard playing Death Guard. Third was Aaron Towler playing Dark Angels. Second, Steven Glazenberg or Glansberg, excuse me, playing Chaos, and in first, Brad Chester playing Drukhari.
Very cool to see that happen. And I didn't know, was everyone involved? Were they all military people, or are they just, was this an invitational event?
I think it's just called that. I don't actually think it's exclusive to military people.
Okay,
or I could be totally wrong. Just some speculation.
I don't know if the organizers could reach out to us. I'd love to hear more about your event. So that sounded very exciting. Also, congratulations to Shane Galvin with Space Wolves. He went 1-5 on the weekend. So congratulations for the Wooden Spoon in that particular event. So by popular request, we'll go over the next event. And before we get to the top five, a couple of our listeners have asked me, hey, can you go over the path to victory a little bit? So that's always one people wanted to hear. So we'll move over to the Bug Eater GT. And that is, I know it's somewhere in the Midwest. Give me a sec. It's actually in Omaha, Nebraska. It's actually a fundraiser for the local debate team. The guy who runs it is actually a high school teacher. So at the end of day one, there were 6 undefeated players. That includes, in first place at that time, was Dan Cornwall with Death Guard. Second place was James Keeling with Drukhari. Third place, Cody Giroux with Drukhari. Fourth place, Scott Sasser with Death Guard. Fifth place, Jeff Husser. with Adeptus Auroritas, and sixth place, former ITC champion Matrut with Drukhari. So as it breaks down the following day, James Keeling ran into Dan Cornwall and dispatched him pretty quickly with a 90-30 victory. Cody Giroux was able to top Scott Sasser 61-48. Matrut also took out Jeff Hasser in another lopsided affair 100-18. Hang in there, Jeff. Those are rough games. And then just lurking right below the 2-1, Ben Neal with Tao was able to score a 99-point victory against his opponent, Matthew Dorman. That'll come back later when we get to the top five. Moving forward to round five, Matt Root then took on James Keeling, and Matt was able to pull off the victory with a 75-64 sissy slap fight between two Drukhari players. Ben Neal, as I mentioned before, was able to jump into the top of the fray and took out Cody Giroux by just the slimmest of margins, 90-86, which set us up for the final round, Matt Root versus Ben Neal. So Drukhari versus Tao, and yeah, didn't quite end out so well for the greater good. Matt Root was able to beat Ben 95-41, and James Keeling was able to take out Cody Giroux 99-60, which then gets us to our top five. Which looks something. You got that?
Yeah. So in fifth place is Sean Dilley playing Death Guard. Fourth, Ryan Olson playing Eldari. Third, Dan Sammons playing Imperium. Second, James Keeling playing Drukhari. And in first, Matt Root with his Drukhari.
Yeah, Ben Neal actually fell to sixth place, although he also had five wins. As did Jeff Hauser, they did not have enough battle points, so they got pushed aside by Ryan Olson and Sean Dilley for the top five. Our friend of the show, Colin McDade, came in ninth. Cody Giroux, who we mentioned also there, with suffering two losses on day two, ended up the day in 10th place, and Dan Cornwall finished in 11th, Scott Sasser finishing 12th. And of course, got to thank the guy who sticks it out all the way to the end, Adam Moen with Orcs. He's your Wooden Spoon winner, going 1-5.
That's going to be me at LVO.
You have those days, and it sucks when you, especially when you do like multiple travel, you're like, oh my God, nothing is going right today. And you're just like, it just snowballs. You're just like, oh, it's days like that happen.
See, I used to be a big drinker at events, but then I stopped so that I could be competitive. But I feel like this first LVO where I get to see everyone will be a drinking event.
And I don't think you'll be alone. I think, like you said, there's going to be a lot of folks to be like, hey, check out who we are. I haven't seen you in forever. And especially with LVO, it's just, you see so many people from, it's one of the, you know, there's those four events throughout the year that tracks people from across the country and across the world to bring to one event. So that'll be pretty cool. All right. So we're halfway through the year. Things we want to look forward to. What do you want to see in the next 6 months?
How much time you got?
Let's see. Good question. Let's make it 8 minutes.
Here's what I'd like to see. Here's my top three wish list. And I'm just coming up with these as I go. Cause I didn't know that this was a topic. Thanks. Well, I did know, but I forgot about it. No preparation. There's something vaguely sent about the show notes. Okay. So my number one thing is that June 23rd, as part of the Warhammer Plus reveal, they reveal that Warhammer Plus is not just animation, but it's also a full digital internet based platform for rules distribution, including digital rules and other types of things. And that the Warhammer app will be kind of like your Warhammer app and, you know, Warhammer Plus ID will be kind of tied together, and that they're going to basically abandon this horrific release like pipeline or however they get rules out and go full digital. They've learned their lesson. And they understand that it's really frustrating that rules are out of date and they have to put out FAQs on day one just to fix their FAQs. So they're going to go to a full digital model. So that's my first wish. My second wish is that we get caught up with codexes. So from the math and based on their language around the release date of the Thousand Suns and Grey Knight codex, they were supposed to be out by now, which means Sisters and Orcs probably would have been out by now. So we're now three codexes still behind, and it's in June. So I'm hoping that in the later half of the year, the release schedule gets accelerated and that by the end of the year, we get at least another, like, I don't know, six codexes, like one a month, at least for the remainder of the year. And that'll bring us the majority of the factions. And then I guess my third wish is that, I don't know if this is Games Workshop, but My third wish is just that things are back to normal and I can start playing events again. That's what I'm looking forward to.
Sounds good.
Because I'm already signed up for LVO. I have the Las Vegas team tournament, which I've got a ticket for, and I'll be coming down to Charity Hammer that the Biff guys are throwing in August. But that I have a feeling border restrictions will still be in place, so that's going to be a little bit of a sketchier trip, but I'm still going to make it because it's an important event for me. But I'm hoping at least by the LV Las Vegas team tournament, I can go to come visit and travel and play games.
Ray, how about you?
Let's see. The Thousand Suns Codex released. Let's see. Better rules for Magnus, because I still think that all things considered, he needs a bit of an upgrade, even compared to Mortarion.
So his points didn't change. Do you think we're going to see a... Do you think that's a good sign or a bad sign?
With GW, I think it's too soon to say. Even with the news on the points. I'm hoping it's good news. He just needs... And I was talking to Eric about this because I actually saw him in person on Friday. He needs just a little something because he should not...
You talking Magnus or me? You saying I need something or Magnus needs something?
Magnus needs something.
Okay.
I'm sorry. I might have misspoken on who I spoke to and what.
I'm just giving you crap.
I played a game against Necrons, and I sat and watched as the Void Dragon just about killed him in one close combat phase, and Magnus can't do half that damage to him unless he's in multiple phases, so he needs just a little something extra. You know, whether that just be something like a sweeping attack, like how...
I'm sure he will. Almost every model now, like... Bellicor's got one. The new Sisters Lady got one. Mortarion had one. It seems like a lot of the units, the bigger monster units, they're almost all getting universally sweep attacks. So I'd imagine Magnus will get one too.
Yeah. And I don't think it's going to happen because we didn't see it with Mortarion, but I mean, it'd be great if he had that rule where you could only deal so much damage in, you know, a given phase. I guess they are being selective on who they give that to.
Yeah, and especially, I'll be curious to see if he gets a rule like Mortarion where he has to be the Warlord, in which case Bash Brothers effectively becomes dead. Like, and they might have like a thing where it's like, if two models have this rule, then you can only include one, you know? Because you're able to include both of them, but Mortarion has to be the Warlord, but like, what if they both have that rule? Because you'd think they would as a Primarch.
Yeah, and I, as someone who reads the books more than probably should, just because... there's other things I need to be doing with my time. There's no reason for them to actually be fighting together. I mean, Mortarion hates Psykers and Magnus specifically with a passion.
Mm-hmm.
Outside of the events of the Heresy, they don't even fight together anywhere near the same sector, let alone on the same battlefield.
Yeah, I mean, it's kind of ironic, though, now that Mortarion is a Psyker as well. He's kind of become what he hated.
Well, and that actually, that happens even before he becomes a Demon Prince, which adds in a whole other layer of hypocrisy.
I'll just be honest though, I've read the books too. I never like to make like those kinds of like, I guess, arbitrary rules decisions based on like some very like, I guess, I don't want to call it like not important lore, but it's not like core lore to those characters that they don't like each other. For me, it's like there's basically a lore reason to either do or not do just about anything in the game. Like I could come up with any sort of cool lore reason that like Chaos and Custodes would fight together. Or I could come up with a lore reason that like, you know, there's lots of like just ridiculous things that you come up with and examples of like lore that's stretched. So I've always been against the idea that like there's obviously some core lore rules that you want to kind of like keep intact, but I've hated it when things feel unnecessarily restricted because of like something in a 30K book, you know. It feels needlessly malicious, basically.
That's all
right.
I'm just trying to forge my own narrative.
There you go. It's form your own story. Ray, any other wishes for the next 6 months?
Yeah, although it has nothing to do with the actual gameplay, I'd like them to actually update the painting app, which they haven't done in like 2 years.
Yeah, I actually took mine. Yeah, if you watch the videos now, they are definitely changing their approach and how they use their paints. And it doesn't match what's in the app anymore. So it's like, oh, okay. So I have a feeling that all those videos will be on Warhammer Plus, but who knows? We'll see. But
still, I used the painting app once, and now I just use like notes in my...
Well, that's where I store my notes. And honestly, all it really is for me now is a shopping list. Okay, what paint did I need again? Well, I kept it in the app. So, But it used to be you have the classic style and you have the contrast style. And if you watch the way they paint now, they use the contrast almost like washes, especially in recess washes. So it's like, oh, that's different than what you have on the app. Please update that. So, sorry, Ray, I cut you off. Anything else?
No, that was it.
All right. I think all those things would be great. The key thing I'm looking forward to absolutely next 6 months, we've got the Ocotillo Onslaught November 6th and 7th. So as familiar venue, but it's a new event for us. So I have a lot on my plate to make that run smoothly. And it's been a while since I've run an event. So hope to get some more event practice as a TO, as a judge again, and also see everybody back again in a safe environment. It'd be wonderful. Other thing too, speaking of apps, way back when at the start of the ITC season, we were promised box scores available from every tournament. Still hasn't happened yet. Be great if I could tell you, for example, in the final game here with Matt Root versus Ben Neal, what secondaries did they take? Who scored what on primaries? No idea.
Sorry, who made that promise?
Best Coast Pairings.
Yeah.
And also... Well, with their partnership with Down Under Pairings, I thought they merged. I'm still confused to what that really means. Individual scorecards for players, all that was supposed to come down the pike. None of that's happened yet. So I'm kind of like, hopefully it's not too late to salvage the rest of the season. So
it's right up there with their, we've got the circuit with LVO and the app won't crash commitment.
Yeah. So that's a big change that I'm looking forward to there as well. So. And so that's some of the fun parts there. And also, of course, like I said, glad it was really cool to see old friends on Friday night. And my last wish would be we've had, for some odd reason in COVID, and Ray, make sure I get the numbers right, we have 3 new hobby stores in the Phoenix area now.
Yeah, and that sounds about right.
Yeah, I just hope they all survive. So it's not an easy business, and never has been. And when, you know, the old Empire Games died, it was like, what? How is that possible? It's like, but yeah, there's now 3 new stores that just opened up during COVID. So welcome to the party, and hope there's enough love to go around. So go from there. Which brings us to the ITC Top 10. So interesting enough, most of the events from this weekend are tabulated in this result, except the Bug Eater GT. So they may change throughout the week. But as of now, minus the Bug Eater GT, this is your ITC Top 10. 10th place, Anthony DiVanella with 967 points. Marshall Peterson at 992 points in 9th place. 8th place, Jason McKenzie. 7th place, Seth Piper. 6th place, Junior Flahey. 5th place, Mark Esch. 4th place, James Keeling. So I'm sure his ranking will go up a little bit after the Bug Eater GT. Brad Chester with his big win this past weekend moves in 3rd place. Colin McDade, 2nd place with his Harlequins, 1,094 points. In 1st place, though, for the 5th week in a row, Sean Naden with 1,229 points. Comfortable lead over Colin McDade. And all 10 players have 6 events so far this season. So there we have it. Gentlemen, any parting thoughts before we wrap up the show?
No, I think next week we'll see a big shakeup in those rankings. And very excited for the ACO and those results. So good luck to everyone that's headed there this week.
Atlantic City, everyone. Very excited about that.
Not in Georgia.
Not in Georgia.
No. Coming from a Canadian who doesn't know his geography.
Jim, what do you got on your shows this week?
So I've actually pared down my streaming a little bit just because it is summer here and I am enjoying the weather and the girls and the drinking. I'm only streaming about 3 times a week now. This week we have Best Overall Show on Thursday, me and Daniel Smith from Brohammer, who's co-hosting. And I will be releasing my Death Guard painting video, which I was working on before we started this cast, shortly. That should be this week. But tomorrow, if you guys are around at 12 o'clock Pacific Standard Time, That's noon. My battle report video with Play on Tabletop is premiering, so make sure to check that out on their channel. I play Gary Sacco, a very devious Dark Angels player, and you guys are going to see how truly bad at Warhammer I really am, and that's all I'll say without spoilers.
All right. So if you have any wishes that you'd like to see in the next 6 months, post them in our Facebook page. Goes right below in the comment section of this particular episode. I'd like to hear from you there. I'll be working on some terrain, get stuff ready for our big event. So I'll be posting updates on our Instagram feed. You can find us there as well. In the meantime, my name's Eric.
I'm Raymond.
And I'm Jim.
And thank you for listening to the Exterminatus podcast.